Blog Talk Radio.
Mode One.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
What exactly is your definition and description of love? Is it that warm, fuzzy feeling that you have when you're with someone you are really, really attracted to? Is it simply a more profound variation of unquenchable lust? Or does loving someone involve accepting a companion for who they truly are, regardless of their flaws or perceived shortcomings? Have you ever found yourself feeling like a love addict? Someone who is constantly falling in love and out of love with just about every desirable man or woman that you have a conversation with? If you fall into this category, why did you feel like you were in love with this person in, say, only a few days or only a few weeks? What factors caused you to fall out of love with these respective men or women? On a different note, if you are a female listener tonight, are you one who was brought up to believe that you should wait until marriage before you have sex for the first time? If so, and you did indeed wait until marriage to have sex for the first time, did the sex live up to your expectation, or were you disappointed during your honeymoon? What are your thoughts on premarital abstinence and celibacy? Do you want to experience more orgasms in your sex life? Tonight, I am going to have a most interesting conversation with not one, but two very intelligent, articulate, and talented actresses who have written and starred in their own one-woman shows that are currently touring the United States. One guest has a stage play entitled Evolution of a Love Addict, and my other guest has a one-woman show entitled In Search of O, as in orgasm. Who are these women that have decided to bare their souls in the name of entertainment so that other women and even men can absorb their unique brand of wisdom and even experience some form of healing from listening to experiences that may be similar to some of their own? Their names are Miss Natasha Dixon and Miss Christy Ferris, and tonight Natasha and Christy are going to open up and share some of their thoughts on love, sex, dating, and relationships as each of these lovely women takes time out of their very busy schedules in order to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my God, oh my God, is this Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh my God, you're really good at this.
Gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect the woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, Mode One. This is
Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight, and the McClendon Report. Right now, you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode one, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
Of your hand makes my pulse react. That it's only the thrill of boy meeting girl while possess a trap. It's physical, only logical. You must try to ignore that it means more than.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, November 15th, and you have to excuse me while I look through all of my gifts I got from President Obama, because, you know, President Obama, he wrote me a little card. He said, "Hey, Alan, I need your vote. Here's some gifts to motivate you, and here you go." So, you know, I got like a blender. I got like a little toaster. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. According to Mitt Romney, he said that President Obama only won because he gave gifts to young people and minorities. Right. All together now. Right, right. Just say I lost. I ran a good race. I lost. And good luck to the president. But anyway, for the last few weeks, I've been having all these comments related to politics. But as you know, my show does not center on politics. It centers primarily on dating and relationships, male-female interactions. Now, normally, I interview a lot of men and women who've written books offering dating advice, advice related to attraction and seduction, advice related to sex. Everybody know I love talking about sex, sex, or as we like to say on this show, fucking. recently, I don't know if too many of you know, but in my background, see, if you're familiar with stage productions, there's Broadway, then there's Off-Broadway. Well, back in the day, yours truly used to do off Broadway stage productions. Yes, I did. I did a few stage productions back in the day. So I have kind of a love for people who do theater, people in the acting, you know. Yes, so this will be, I want to say, the second, maybe the third, I think only the second time I will be interviewing two playwrights. If you remember, just a few weeks ago, I had a Chicago playwright on my show, Shoya Bowman. Well, tonight I have two women that are actresses, playwrights. They what I call slash people. My nickname for them is slash people, you know, when you're actress slash playwright, slash director, slash screenwriter, slash. They're just two multi-talented women. Both of them are just lovely young ladies, very articulate. And I love people who go out in life and make their dreams happen. You know, I was watching, what's his name? Was in The Dark Knight Rises. I think his name is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I might have messed up his name. But he was being interviewed on The Ellen Show. And he said one lesson he learned in Hollywood is that you can't wait for things to happen. You have to go out and make things happen. And that's what these two guests tonight. Now, it's interesting. One of the two guests who I will be speaking with first. She's been on my show before, but not under this title, under the title of actress and playwright and all the other things on her credentialed resume. If you're one of my long-time listeners, I'm talking about old school, upfront and straightforward listeners, I started doing the show in June of 2007, but I really got going in January of 2008. And in May of 2008, I remember the exact date. It was May 1st of 2008. It was on a Thursday. I had a show. It was actually a part two of a series I was doing on black women. Because I don't do too many. I only do a handful of shows that specifically deal with races. I usually like to do shows that deal with just men in general and women in general, and not specifically, say, black men or black women. But I've done a few of those shows. And I was doing a show. The first part of it was called Angry Black Women. And, of course, I had sisters, boy, they was listening, calling in, getting mad, getting feisty, you know. And it was so popular, I had so many listeners that I did a part two called Chasm, the chasm between black singles. And I had two women who were on a radio show at the time, and my guest, one of my two guests tonight, she took part in that discussion. Let me see if I have a little, if you excuse me while I look through my audience list. Because, see, she was on the show back in the day. All my long-time listeners have noticed, I've got more and more provocative with each year I've been on air. Like, when I first got on the air, I was PG. Then I was PG-13. Then I was R-rated. Now I just say anything. Man, I'm liable to talk about anything. But I used to always have this running joke about how I was trying to keep the show PG, and this is what she said.
I think that a lot of women are looking for validation, and that's why they're throwing the poo nanny out there. You throw that poo nanny out there.
Hey, you using my term, Natasha. I'm known for saying poo nanny, because that's what I say on my PG-13 show, poo nanny.
I'm trying to keep it Disney.
That's right, because I got a lot of Disney Channel watching people listening to my show. that clip cracks me up. But that's one of my two guests tonight. Yeah, I used to always say my show was geared towards the Disney Channel watching listeners. Well, you might as well screw that up, because now my show is geared towards them late night Cinemax listeners, because I, on this show, I actually say things like fucking, you know, sucking dick. I get raw. Not on every show. Depends on what the subject matter is. But I get pretty raw on my show. So if you're listening, you're a new listener, and you're a blush easy type, oh my God, I feel for you. Because this brother, I might have a very innocent, wholesome looking face, but, you know, I can get raw depending on the flow of the conversation. Speaking of getting raw, evidently, former CIA director David Petraeus was getting raw. He was not only, you know, he was supposed to be just giving information so a woman can write a book. And then I think he went mode one on her, and he was like, you know, you looking real nice in that dress. And she was like, oh, thank you. You know, I appreciate that. He's like, no. You looking real nice in that dress, like you probably got a song on under that dress. She's like, you so bad. And that's how I got started. Next thing you know, they start going at it like rabbits. And then, you know, she start getting territorial. And she start writing emails to another woman like, you better stay away from him. He's not my husband. He's just somebody I'm cheating on my husband with. But you better stay away from him. And the woman who got the email said, oh, no, you didn't. She was like, bitch, who you write me? And then all just got out of control to the point where the FBI dude, check this out. The woman told the FBI guy, said, hey, this woman is writing me harassing emails. He said, hey, you want to see this picture of me with no shirt on looking sexy? Now, you might think I'm making that up, but seriously, the FBI agent sent the woman a shirtless picture. Then she said, oh, damn, it looks like you've been working out. Anyway, this woman been harassing me. I want you to find out who it is. So he went and found out that it was the woman who was writing the book for Petraeus. And then another general involved
got involved, and, you know, he was like, yeah, you look sexy in them outfits and stuff. She's like, ooh, thank you, so bad. And then he got, you know, just brought into the man. It was like a big soap opera, man. What's up? I told friends, if David Petraeus had just read my first book, Mo 1, Let the Woman Know What You're Really Thinking, then read my other book, Ooh, Say It Again, and read my latest book, he wouldn't have gotten in all this trouble. I know I'm telling the truth. He let you-know-what think for him. He wasn't thinking with his brain. He looked at a woman, and he said, boing, and then just lost all sense of rational thinking, and he didn't think about the long-term consequences. Now his name is dragged through the mud. He's no longer the CIA director. Just embarrassing. Over some orgasms. That's what we're going to be talking about tonight for a portion is orgasms. This man's desire for pleasurable orgasms cost him his career. Think about that. I mean, I'm not even really being lighthearted here. This man and this woman, I don't want it to be one-sided, they let their desire for orgasms to affect their lives to the point where this man lost his career and another general is on the verge of losing a position. Man, I tell you, I got a frat brother. I wrote an article recently. A frat brother said, man, men make some of their dumbest decisions when their dicks hard. No man listening to this can argue with that. You know I'm telling the truth. Men make some of their dumbest decisions when they have an erection. I've made some in my life. I won't lie. None that cost me my career or anything like that. But I've made some mistakes that... you know, a week later, I was like, damn, why did I do that? And so, but, yeah, it's a big mess. So that's been the big news story all week. And the secondary, I love my president. I know I got Republicans who listen to my show. But I love my president because he got firm in his first press conference after winning re-election. You see, he had the sisters back. Susan Rice, he looked at the GOP. And this is my paraphrased version of what he said. He said, do not fuck with her, okay? If you want to see the wrath of Obama, do not mess with her. If you want to mess with somebody, mess with me, the big B.O., but don't mess with my peeps. I like that, man. I was like, yeah, tell him. That's right. I will be right back after this intermission break, and we're going to get... The conversation started with my first guest, who again has been here before. She's no stranger to Upfront Straightforward, but this is going to be her first time in the new and more provocative. Because again, she, you know, when she was on the show before, we had to say words like "poo nanny" for my Disney Channel watching listeners. But I will be right back. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Can you feel the tension? You know what's coming up next, don't you? You all know what's coming up next. So, what can I tell you? I'm excited. I'm standing backstage and I'm all jittery. It's the moment we've all been waiting for. What can I tell you? I read this guy's book about 2 years ago, and this is some of the most powerful shit I've read. The guy's mind-blowing. He's got a radio show. He's been all over the place. He's got crazy fans. He's amazing at what he does. He loves helping people as well. This guy will go on for hours and hours, even if it's like one person or 100 people. He doesn't give a shit. He'll stand there and he'll help people and help them and help them and just keep it. And he loves this stuff. He's passionate about it. He changed my life. He's changing everybody's life in the room and thousands of people. And he's amazing. I'm really happy. I consider him one of my mentors. I love the guy. Please go crazy for Alan Roger Curry.
To know what you said to the Japanese girl on roller skates.
I went up to her. I said, you got a talent for this rollerblading thing. And that was probably the only moment when she was smiling. She was like, yes, I love to rollerblade. I said, well, to be quite frank with you, I ain't give a fuck about rollerblading. I said, your ass looks so juicy in that, what is that, spandex? And she was like, oh my God, I mean, would you just come to Venice Beach to just look at women's asses? I was like, is that a trick question?
Please
please visit www.modeone.net for more information on the Direct Approach Dating Summit 2010 DVD. Are you an expert and or book author who offers men and women products and services related to dating and relationships? If you have a new product, a valuable service, or upcoming event or speaking presentation that you would like to advertise on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network that is guaranteed to hit your target demographic audience, then look no further than Blog Talk Radio's number one talk radio podcast program for active dating singles. Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry has had more episodes ranked number one in the category of romance, dating and relationships, love and sex, and overall self-help for singles than any other talk radio podcast program on the entire Blog Talk Radio network since January of 2008. I will help you advertise any product, service, or event that is designed to help men and women improve their love lives, sex lives, and overall social lives. Please write me at Blog Talk Radio Advertising at mode1.net. That's MODEONE.net. Don't wait. Do it now.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the number one most listened to talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Network in the category of romance and dating and relationships. I got to give love, as always, to all my listeners. But as you know, particularly my chat room listeners. Now, I'm missing some of my loyal listeners tonight. They must be watching Scandal, and they're going to catch it on the archive. So I'll give them a pass because I have my live listeners, then I have my archive listeners. But my most loyal archive listener, remember I was talking about my veteran listeners, old school listeners? She's one of them. Adrian, a.k.a. Diva 362636, was in my chat room. Diva has been, we've been friends since, what, 97. And she actually remembers that episode when I had this first guest on because she participated. I think she called in on that show. And I don't want to pick on the other woman. I had two women on that show. And now the guest I'm about to talk to, she was a character in her own right. But the other one, bless her heart, she had this stretch where she was talking about, she said, I've had brothers' backs. I've helped them out when they were struggling. And she said, you know, I really helped them out. I fixed them dinner and I made food for them. And you thinking, you know, she really did elaborate stuff. And then she said, yeah, like I fixed my man peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And my whole chat room that day just ate her alive. And she was in the chat room. They ate her up. And I really couldn't defend her because, I mean, when you preface it by saying I really helped these men while they were struggling and then turn around and say I fixed some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, I mean, I was basically like, a brother can do that for himself. I mean, even when I'm broke, I got enough money to buy
make myself peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And she got really defensive. And oh, man. But she is a good woman, though. I'm not picking on her. She was real cool. We've talked since the show is over. She's real cool. But, yeah, Diva3626 in my chat room. My guest who I'm about to introduce is in my chat room. I got a number of guests. I got Chahale in my chat room. I got Susie. I never can pronounce this. Why do you pick this username? Susie DeJesus or DeJesus. I know you're cool. It's nothing against you, but that username, I can't pronounce that. As always, a few quick shout-outs. My older brother, Ace Confidant, Stephen Curry, Irvin V. Pulliam, the third match one, Vanessa Turner, my female supporters group on Facebook. I got a Facebook group of women who support me. Much love, much respect to them. And now let me get to introducing my guest, my returning guest, I should say. She has been on my show before, again, back in May 2008, and she's a native of San Jose, California. She developed an interest in the performing arts when she was just a little bitty thing, a little youngster, and she later moved to Los Angeles to pursue a career as a professional actress, and she's appeared in a number of feature films and television shows. She was actually in Diary of a Tired Black Man. I've interviewed a director of that show on this very show, Tim Alexander. She's been on CSI, Crime Scene Investigation, ER, Third Watch. She's been in a number of short films, and she's even written a couple of films herself. She's received training at the Leslie Kahn Studios, Howard Fine Studios. She just early this year, she received her degree in psychology. So as I'm interviewing her, she's going to be, you know, psychoanalyzing me. And my much props to her for getting that piece of paper. And in addition to her acting achievements, she just has a lot of skills, a lot of talent. She's been an entertainment columnist for the Houston Sun. She's written a children's book, The Adventures of Jordan. And most notably, what we want to talk about is she created a one-woman show that audiences are just loving to death. It's based on a book of poems that she wrote by the same title. It's called Evolution of a Love Addict. Evolution of a Love Addict. She loves pet photography. She has a number of other interests that we can talk about. But right now, on behalf of the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and Upfront and Straightforward listeners, give it up for the lovely, talented, and she's a piece of work character, Natasha. What's up, Natasha?
You are crazy, Alan. What an intro. What an intro. I received that, all of it. Especially all the clapping and cheering.
Oh, yes, you deserve it, girl, because you, hey, number one, you're doing your thing, and I give you much props for
that. Thank you.
Yeah, I've been keeping up with you, and yeah, you see, you made it happen. I give most of my guests, I don't invite people on my show unless I think they're worthy of much kudos. But I particularly love those who make stuff happen. Make it happen. Because that's one of my things that I give advice to people when they come to me and say, you know, you can't go through life waiting for people to do that proverbial knock on the door. Hey, here's your opportunities. Now you got to go out there and make. And then once you start making things happen, that's when those opportunities start coming your way. And so,
yeah, work begets work. That's what they say.
So, sister, you know, much props to whoever knew that, you know. Because, yeah, when you were on my show that first time, man, woo, y'all jumped into the lion's den with your feet on the ground.
We sure did. I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, because I had gotten some sisters hot.
But that topic is deep. That's a topic. I mean, you interviewing Tim, Tired Black Man, like, that's a topic that people, you know,
wanted to
discuss. Well, Tim, he was actually my he was my very first guest on Up Front and Straightforward.
Wow.
My very first episode in June of 2007. Yeah, he was my first guest. I've actually had him on twice. And I had on one other person from that movie, Jimmy Jean-Louis. He was a guest on my show. We talked about getting tested for HIV. And then you and Michelle, that's her name, Michelle, came on the show.
Yep.
And it's funny because it shows you can't judge a book by its cover, because when I looked at your pictures, I should have known you being an actress. I don't know what I was thinking about. But for some reason, I thought you were going to be this really calm, mild-mannered type. Yes, Ellen, it's a pleasure to meet you. And but you were full of opinions that day.
I'm always, I call it my two cents in a soapbox, because so much of my life I didn't have an opinion, and then I just went and got some damn counseling, hint, hint, clue, everybody, and now I have a voice, so I figured I might as well use it.
Well, I heard that. Well, tell my audience, first of all, what first drew you to developing your love of both writing and performing? Where did that come from?
I think performing, if I'd be completely honest with you, early on, the performing aspect came from needing validation. I ain't even going front. And that's me looking back on it. It came from
okay,
the need.
Okay, time out right now. Time out, Natasha. I got to remind you the name of my show, okay? And you're going to have to share this with your friend who I'll be interviewing later. This is Upfront and Straightforward, which means you never have to preface by saying, okay, can I be really frank or can I be really honest? That's what this whole show is about. I don't want any basic stuff. If you
well,
used to do a regular interviews where you just kind of give those basic morsels of information.
Yeah, the stuff on the surface. No, this is the deep.
This is the show where people say, damn, did she just say that? Damn. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I just said it. So as you're young, you know, you want that validation for whatever reasons. As I got older, I absolutely developed a love for expressing myself, encouraging and empowering women through media. So early on, it was the need for validation. Then I went through some stuff. You know, married, divorced, had my son when I was 19 or a week before my 19th birthday. And I found myself wanting to encourage and empower women to know their value. And I knew that I would be able to do that through media. So I actually fell in love with that expression. So the writing came from, you know, my experience, the hurt, the heartbreak. That's where all the writing came from.
Mm-hmm. Now, you wrote a book of poems entitled Evolution of a Love Addict. First of all, what is Natasha Dixon's precise definition of a love addict?
A love addict is someone who seeks that romantic love because they need a fix. And when they don't have it, they are fiending like crack, like Chris Rock on It's Just Calling Me. That's what I consider a love addict. When they cannot do without because they feel they need it, it's not just a sharing of love between individuals. It is, I'm looking for that romantic love, and as soon as that romantic love is over, I'm kicking you to the curb and I'm on to the next. And usually along with love addiction comes codependency or sex addiction. But that whole love addict thing is strictly people looking for that romantic love, and they need it. They might have fantasies about people that they didn't even have conversations with, or they will start relationships, but they're always starting a relationship. You always see them with somebody new.
Mm. Interesting, because I was going to ask you what's the distinction between, because see, us men, we always have titles like sex addict thrown at us. So I was going to ask you, what's the distinction between a love addict and a sex addict? But you pretty much, based on your description, I can see the distinction.
I think it's a very fine line. It's a very fine line
mm-hmm.
between the two.
And look at you with your psychology degree, Woo! See, she has credibility to talk about stuff like this. Now, yes, now, Brian, you need to understand that there's a
I think everybody needs to know a little bit about why they do things, and, you know, you can improve yourself when you seek that out. You can seek out the patterns. Because I wouldn't have labeled it love addiction, but I went to counseling, and then I laid all of my poems from 1991 to now. I laid them all out, and I looked at them, and I was like, damn, who is that brother? Like, I need to go back and get with him. And I kept reading another one. I was like, ooh, he sound good. They were all poems about love, about the excitement of somebody new. And these weren't even relationships.
See, it was funny. I remember when I had you on a show before, see, I got a little flirtatious with you.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of you reciprocating my flirtation, you just wrote me an email. It just said, puff, puff, pass. And
yeah, that's my signature poem. That's how I open up my show. That's my signature poem right there. It's hot. But that's what I used to do. I used to puff up and pass.
Oh man.
It had become second nature, puff puff passing. It was second nature.
Now, I take it with some guys, there was longer puffs and more reluctant passes, but when it was all said and done, it was still puff, puff, pass.
Well, after the divorces, it was puff, puff, pass. I believed everybody had an expiration date. I told a guy that once. I was like, like milk, everybody has an expiration date. Like, we all know this, but how are you going to just be cocky and tell somebody that? Like, really?
That's something. Now, see, I'm going to criticize your gender.
Go on, right ahead.
And this was based on a psychologist. I wish I could source him and say his name. I can't remember. But when I was in college, I read this book. It was an interesting book. And when I shared some of the contents with my male friends, just about all of them agreed with this assertion by this psychologist who wrote this book. He said, among other things, a lot of people, the society and the media tends to always associate the female gender with romance and love. But he said men are actually the ones, based on, I guess, his studies and interviews, surveys, et cetera, that fall the deepest in love. Like, he said the average man will only fall in love like maybe twice in his whole life, whereas women – are more likely to fall in love 8 times, 10 times, 12 times, 15 times, so on. But when we invest our heart, we invest it really deep. And if things don't work out, we just say, fuck it. And then we seriously go into puff, puff, pass mode. Because I know I have. Every time I've had a really long relationship and it didn't work out, man, whoever I dealt with after that, it was like, oh, Lord, bless their hearts, because I was on a womanizing path that was just merciless.
I think women naturally take more risks. Women are naturally more risk takers when it comes to love. And then from a psychological standpoint, when you get into a relationship and you break up, you create something called mind maps, which makes it easier to have the breakup. So you get into another relationship and you break up. You get in another.
What's that
relationship
called again?
Break up. A mind map. I mean, literally, if you looked under the brain under a microscope, there are certain neurotic pathways that are created by your habits, and it makes that habit a lot easier each time you do it. Like if you were walking through a field, you walk through that field once, there was no path, the grass kind of bent over. You walk through that field a bunch of times. Eventually, there's a dirt path through the field, and that is exactly what we do. So I think women have gotten used to bouncing back, and they fall in love, and, you know, they get hurt and break up, but they're willing to do it again. Women are generally more risk takers. I think it takes a strong person to fall in love again.
Oh, I would say that's true probably for both genders, yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, the only way, this is my opinion anyway, the only way you can really experience the true essence of love is you have to make yourself vulnerable to one degree or another. And I think for most people, and particularly men, you know, there's certain things that women are socialized. I talk about some of it in my book, that it's, they're socialized different from men, and we're socialized. And one, I think, the most common known among men is we're taught, you know, like not to cry, not to be sensitive. You know, if you played like football, you know, your coach would be like, man, you know, don't be crying after this loss. You little punk.
It's a sign of weakness. Vulnerability can be, I mean, some people mistake that as weakness, which I think is actually a strength.
So, yeah, when you make yourself vulnerable and then... Now, of course, when you're vulnerable and the person you're with is vulnerable and you guys trust each other and, you know, got each other's back and it ends up in a blissful relationship, a blissful marriage, then, of course, there's no regrets. But I think the regret comes when you open your heart to somebody and they either take advantage of it, take it for granted, stomp on it, and then that's when, like you said about, you know, taking the risk of love second time. Once you've been hurt, basically, once you've had your heart broken, that's when you say, oh, shit, I ain't going to take that risk again. Fuck that.
Yeah.
No way. And so, yeah.
And that's when you put it on lockdown or you puff fast.
So what makes, I mean, you know, I already feel like actors and actresses are a different breed, and even to a certain extent, writers like myself, because you have to, especially when you're doing a one-woman show that's essentially autobiographical or based on autobiographical material, isn't it a little bit scary to kind of open yourself up to the world like that? Or is it just exhilarating, or both?
No, I think early on, fear is, I mean, I started writing 10 years ago, so fear is what took it 10 years. But once I decided to get on stage, I had to just be like, you know, excuse my expression, but balled out and just go for it. You can't be afraid.
You gotta say that again. You did what?
I'm just saying I had to be balled out and go for it because I couldn't be afraid and be standing up there in front of you telling you my business and my weird idiosyncrasies, like being a snoopaholic and feeling like I'm embarrassed saying it. It doesn't get the point across. So you have to decide you're just going to go balled out and leap. I read something the other day. It's like I'm going to leap and build the wings on my way down. Like you have to just be willing to take that risk.
You making a brother over here rise to the occasion using your provocative, emphatic language. I'm going to give you a little backstory. I don't know if you knew, but that was the original title of my show. I always talk about it a couple times when I do my anniversary shows. Matter of fact, you called in on one of my anniversary shows. But
I called in on the anniversary show.
Yeah, when I do my anniversary shows, I usually mention, you know, how I came about with this show. But one of the things I mention is that, Upfront Straightforward was not my original title. When I very, very, very first started this show, well, actually, I came to Blog Talk Radio real quick. I came to Blog Talk Radio on another guy's show. I was like a regular guest host of another guy's show. But he's, I don't want to get too deep in him, but he has a thing against sisters. He got real major beef. So on air, he said something to the effect of all black women are bitches. And me and this other guest co-host was like, oh, bro, no, you gotta retract that. And he's like, I ain't retracting shit. And I was like, dude, I said, sisters support me. They buy my books. I'm like, if you don't offer apology, I'm out. So anyway, I quit his show. Then I said, okay, I'm going to start my own. And my first title was called Balls Out Talk with Alan Rodgers. No, it wasn't with Alan Rodgers. It was with Mo 1, which is the title of my first book.
The title of your book.
It was called Balls Out Talk. And then what happened, I noticed they were promoting shows on the main page of Blog Talk Radio. And I asked this woman, I said, how can I get one of my episodes promoted? She said, Alan, your title, with all due respect, it's a little bit too provocative for us. You know, the whole ballsy out thing. If you could just make that a little more conventional, a little more palatable to people. And I was like, okay, then that's when I changed it. So I love that. That's my term I use with a lot of guys that I coach. I say, hey, man, you got to be balls out. So to hear you say it is like, ooh, shit.
People know what you mean when you say it. There's no mis. You're not confused. When somebody says that to you, you are not confused.
You definitely not confused. So you decided to open yourself up, do this play. Now, was there deliberation, or did you just immediately say, okay, I'm going to go with this. I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to write it. I'm going to do a performance, find me a director, et cetera. Or did you say, oh, should I do this or should I not? Well, I guess explained that. You said you had to be balls out. So
I guess
you were in balls out mode, you were like, fuck it, I'm doing it.
I was like, I'm doing it. I'm hiring a director. You know, I interviewed a bunch of directors, and I ended up going with Michael Philip Edwards. He has something called the Runt Method, and he's had his own one-man show. And so he and I just, you know, worked together with putting it on stage. And I just had to go for it. There was no time for fear.
No time for fear. I like that.
You know, I had the fear prior, and every now and then in between. But when you get ready to go do a show, yeah, you get butterflies. Just make sure they fly in formation. But you have to just let that go, because then you'll freeze up. And you won't get the point across, because really, with me telling my story, my goal is to help other people. Like, I have one segment in my show called About Snoopaholic. I had a woman after a talk about ask me, how can I stop snooping? That's the type of question we need to ask. You know, so I had a talk with her. You know, I told her how to go about, you know, making that change and making a difference in the choices you make, you know, with the choices you make. And so those types of questions, I think, come from the vulnerability and the honesty of you doing a piece. If I wasn't vulnerable, I wouldn't be exposed in order to help somebody else through something.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I guess that's what makes you special, Natasha, because 99.9% of people, like I know some people won't even go on Facebook because they don't want people in their lives, let alone would they do a one-man or one-woman show exposing some of their past disappointments, past frustrations, past failed relationships, but it sounds like, I haven't seen the show, but it sounds like you have a good mix of comedic moments, dramatic moments, and
So it's a mix of all of them, because I think when you get people to tap into multiple emotions, you can get your point across. You know, might relate more to the comedy.
Now, two questions related to feedback. Have you had at least one woman that said, girl, you was almost telling the story of my life, too?
Oh, I have multiple people come and tell me that. I've had a guy come up to me. He actually might be posting a video testimonial soon. He came up to me, and he's like, I was going to Love Addicts Anonymous. They actually have a Love Addicts Anonymous. And he's out of Atlanta. Yep. And he came up to me, and he's like, you were telling my story. A brother, like a real brother. He was like, you were telling my story. Real in quotations, like what's real, I don't know. But anyway.
What's funny, this goes back, though. I have to refer back to that book I was talking about. Is that, I don't know if you saw this movie called Blue Valentine with Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams.
I think I did, but it was a while ago, right?
No, you saw it, you would remember, for sure. Because that movie, at least for me, that movie, man, I wrote an article about that movie. That movie was deep. And it was so real. But one of the things, there's a portion in the early part of the movie where Ryan Gosling, he said something similar to actually what I already said. He said he's telling one of his coworkers, they were like furniture movers, and he says, why do you think love is always associated with women? And, you know, his coworker says, you know. He says, because I think men are actually more romantic. I can feel where this guy coming from, because, like, when I tell some of my female friends about times when I was in love, they look at me like, Alan, you know you ain't never been in love. And I'm like, well, that's insulting to me to say I've never been. I've been in a shoot.
I will admit that. Me and my friend, we talk about sometimes we think, and this is, I can't believe the words are coming out of my mouth, I don't believe this anymore, but occasionally I think, we would say that we'll make comments thinking they don't have feelings. We're like, oh, my goodness, we act like they don't have feelings.
when, because we think they're just so hard, like they're playing the game, they don't really want to be in love, because we've been exposed to guys who are always trying to avoid relationships, avoid the talk of marriage, avoid anything intimate or deep, but that's not necessarily true. And I think what has happened is we've run into that, and so women begin to just think guys don't really care.
No, guys.
They think they're acting.
Yeah, no. I trust me. If you were to fly on the wall with some of the conversations I've had with male friends, I've literally had to sometimes, I don't want to get too melodramatic, like had to console, you know, put my shoulder around a buddy that was broken up because either he was married or his girlfriend, you know, dumped him or cheated on him. But, you know, it's funny, though, a lot of guys would say, though, like, hey, man, Alan, can you know just keep this between us, man? You know, because they you know, talk about that hard. Because you know the acting is not so much guys acting like they have feelings when they don't. Even though that's true too with a lot of guys, but a lot of acting takes place with men having feelings and acting like they don't.
Yeah,
playing a role like they're callous and aloof and really don't care about a woman when really, you know, I mean. Yeah.
They're having all these feelings and emotions inside.
Oh, yeah. I think the first time, the two times I always say when guys know we, as my brother calls it, what is he calls it being in the syndrome. If he thinks I'm falling for a woman, he'll say, ah, oh, bro, you in the syndrome, dude. You in the syndrome. And I always say, tell guys, you know when you're in the syndrome, when you start missing a woman? Like if a woman you've been seeing says, like, she's going out of town for 5 days, and you, like, every day, like, damn, when is she coming back?
Yes.
You, like, if I hear one of my buddies say, I was like, damn, dude, you in a syndrome. Because when you just into a woman casually, you don't care how long she gone.
You're like, I just need to know when you're coming back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, seriously, you don't really miss them when they apart, but when you falling for someone, yeah, that's the number one thing. The second thing is when you start feeling yourself becoming a combination of jealous and possessive.
I know. I think as a woman, I kind of want a guy who has healthy jealousy. Is that like an oxymoron? I don't want a guy to see some dude flirt with me and him not give a damn. But I don't want him like being all possessive and crazy. But I think you want a guy who has a healthy jealousy. I think there is a healthy jealousy out there.
Yeah, cause see, after that first time he was in the show, I saw somebody just write on your Facebook page, and I was like, hey man, why are you writing on the Facebook page, man? And you was like, Alan, puff puff pass. Sorry.
You are crazy.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
I love you so. Natasha Dixon. Listeners, if you have any questions or comments for this conversation, I'm going to give you a warning. It might go a little longer than what I originally planned because I got started with Natasha a little bit later than I wanted to. So, listeners, you know my show has been known to go into the disco version. But if right now, if at any time during the conversation you have a question for one of my guests, you want to call in and express a comment related to their stage plays or whatever they're commenting on, you can call in at 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. Now I'm going to let Natasha get some swigs of water. She's going to relax for a little bit. I'm going to interview my second guest who has her own show. And then a little later, I'm going to bring Natasha back in, and we're going to have this group talk about this. Natasha, it's actually going to be similar to that last show you were on. In the second half, after I interview next guest, I want to talk about you and her opinions just on the general state of, based on your own opinions, your thoughts, the state of today's relationships, what's going right, what's going wrong, and particularly between brothers and sisters. So, listeners, don't go anywhere. I will be right. Wait, no, before I go to this intermission break, I need Natasha to do me a favor. And, listeners,
what
you know what favor I'm about to ask.
What you want?
Natasha, if you listen to at least only a handful of my shows, you know at some point in my interviews and discussions, I ask my guests to stretch out the O's in mode and say mode one. So give me either your most enthusiastic mode one or your sexiest, seductive, most balls out mode one.
Okay, here we go. Mode one.
Ooh, that was
Alan Roger Curry.
From up front, straight forward.
Alan Roger Curry.
Mode one.
I will be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Mode one.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist. I'm in love with
this. This is Alexandra Cunahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex disease.
This is Nikki Shroom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Brandy L. Davis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.com. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310-310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Alan.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Alan.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Alan.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Nice to see you all again, so.
If you found this page, I'm guessing at least on some level you'd like more success.
Seducing sexy ladies. Here's the deal.
My name's Sasha. Hello. And I like women.
Hey, everybody!
This website has tons of resources to help you guys get that success that you want. It's all there for you. The articles, the videos, my blog, the lots of adventures and tips, it's all there for you guys.
Let's make the magic happen.
If you're interested in some more intense training, take one of my boot camps. They are fucking good. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm doing boot camps all around the world, so I might be coming to your city.
I would love to come over there and teach you this stuff, because it's awesome! And you learn how to meet tons of hot girls. If you're in London.
This is the guy. He's going to take good care of you.
He's really present in the moment. He's really good. He hooks up with tons of girls. Good teacher, and just somebody you want to hang out with and learn from.
Oh, so many names.
It's my first name and my first name.
Okay. Yeah, well, I will see you.
You will?
Soon. Ryan.
Ryan. Me too.
Over the last few years, I've dedicated my life to getting good in a sort of fun and natural way of meeting women in the daytime.
What are you doing actually in your free time? What's your goal?
I meet beautiful girls on the streets. You know, chap girls on the street. Sound test? Sound test 1, 2, 3, 4. Sexy man. Hi. Can I get a little fist action? We're filming. Just one little fist. Just come on. You know you want to. You know you want to fist me right now. Boom shakalaka.
Yeah, check out the bootcamp page if you're interested in that.
I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it's useful to you. So please.
Sasha@sashapway.com. Thanks for coming to the site and...
Stop being a fucking... come on, people. She's there in front of you. That's the only indicator of interest you need. She's there. You're there. Go for it.
Please pay a visit to www.sashapua.com.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview with Natasha Dixon and Christy Ferris on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger. I can't even say my own name. Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the number one ranked talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network in the category of romance, dating, and relationships. I got some bad news for my listeners, and don't get mad. Don't throw any internet equivalent to tomatoes, but I know some of my most loyal listeners get at least disappointed, if not downright mad, when I'm not on the air every week live. Well, I'm not going to be on the air for the next 2 weeks. I know. I'm not going to be on the air for the next 2 weeks, but I will be back Thursday, December 6th. Thursday, December 6th, I will return live. But next week, of course, is Thanksgiving, so I wouldn't have been on next week anyway. I never do Thanksgiving. But normally I wouldn't have been on back on air the following week after Thanksgiving, but I have some things. I'm going to be out of town that Thursday, so I will not be on the air. So I will be back December 6th. So I'll keep you posted on who, once I get my guest confirmed for that date and the discussion topic, I'll let you know on my site. Speaking about the town, you might have heard during the commercial break, you heard Sasha's voice. Well, all the details aren't solidified yet, but I got some big news. I've already announced it on Facebook. Now, if you're familiar with the Direct Approach Dating Summit, that's where I was a featured speaker in London in November 2010. And early this year, I was the headline speaker in Las Vegas in mid-March for the Direct Dating Summit. Direct Dating Summit, then they had another one in Australia. I wasn't in the lineup for that one. But the next one is going to be in Rio de Janeiro. That's right, mid-February, Rio de Janeiro. So if you live in Brazil and you're listening to me right now, live or as an archive, Alan Roger Curry is coming to your country. That's right. Alan Roger Curry is coming to Brazil. Oi! That's right. I know a little bit of Portuguese. I got to learn it. Conhecê-los. Ah, see, thought I didn't know Portuguese. I'm at the basic level right now. But I guarantee you by mid-February, through the help of either Rosetta Stone or somebody else, I'm going to be an intermediate, fluid. But, yeah, I got a fan club. People don't know. Not toot my horn, but I got little fan clubs all over the world because men in 25 different countries have read my books, and one of my fan clubs is in Brazil. Alan Roger Curry, Rio, mid-February. More details to come. And let me give some shout-outs to those in my chat room. Jahel! See, that almost sounds Brazilian. Jahel! I got a number of guests. I got Jason from Australia. See, I got some peeps in Australia. Matter of fact, some of my peeps in Australia were mad that I wasn't in the lineup for the Australian Direct Dating Summit. And they let Sasha know about it. And you should still, if you listen right now, still to this day, you should let Sasha know. You should say, man, that was fucked up that y'all didn't have Alan in Melbourne, Australia. Because they know about Melbourne in Melbourne, Australia. I got Love and Light. Oh, Love and Light loves to cause trouble. I got my guest, Natasha. She's in my chat room. See, she don't mind being in my chat room because ain't nobody dogging her out. But, man, when her and Michelle's on the show, Michelle, they called her peanut butter and jelly. I got Nikki smokes a lot. Quit smoking, Nikki. I don't like that username. Nikki smokes a lot. Unless you're smoking weed, I'll give you a pass on that. But quit smoking. I don't like cigarette smoke. S-Dub72. Stephen Harper is in my chat room. And now I'm about to introduce my second guest for the evening. She was raised in Las Vegas. Later on, she traveled through Ohio, spent a little time there, spent a little time in Connecticut. She graduated with honors from Emerson College. If you're not familiar with Emerson College, they produce a few heavyweights in the entertainment industry, where she earned her BFA in theater. Later, she relocated to Los Angeles to pursue a career as a professional actress, landing roles in a variety of television series and feature films such as Scrubs, General Hospital, Castle, Step in the Movie, Sister Sister, The Steve Harvey Show, Moesha, which I believe is where her and Natasha met, and Kenan and Kel. But most notably, she was Simone Russell. You know, everybody remembers, well, not everybody, but most brothers and sisters should remember those ads for Passions that we show CNN tomorrow on Passions. I used to love those Passions, man. That was the bomb soap. And she was Simone Russell. And here's where she gets my full respect, because not only is she a talented actress, not only is she a talented playwright, not only is she intelligent, articulate, and lovely, but I was doing my homework on this woman. She goes into Watts and Compton. If you've never been to Southern California, let me tell you this. If you were to just stop and say a middle-aged Caucasian couple, you said, hey, where can I get a bite to eat? They would not direct you to Watts and Compton. That is guaranteed. They would not direct you to Watts and Compton, because some shit is always jumping off in Watts and Compton. And she goes there to talk to young women, empower them, inspire them. She's going to South Africa to encourage and strengthen the self-esteem of young ladies there. This woman is tugging at my heartstrings already. So on behalf of the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network and Upfront and Straightforward listeners, give much dap to Miss Christy Ferris. Welcome.
Thank you. It's so funny to hear all that stuff. I was like, oh, dang, I did that too, didn't I? I forgot about that. Like you forget,
yeah,
you know?
I'm impressed with your resume of achievements, and I guess they say birds of a feather flock together. So, Christy, since I'm not as familiar with you as I am with Natasha. Although, you know what's interesting? We live in such this Twitter world and Facebook world. I was looking at our friendship on Facebook.
And we're friends.
And we've been friends since, like, I think April of 2011.
No.
So I had to pat myself on the back. I said, damn, Alan, you got good taste in Facebook.
Yeah, look, I was like, wait a minute, I got a message. Look at that, we're friends. I didn't know that. My little 6,000 or 7,000 or 8,000 people I got on there.
Yeah, but just to give us a little background about you, when did you first find, at what age approximately did you say, I love the performing arts. I love acting. I want to pursue this as a career.
I knew what I wanted to be when I was 4.
Oh, damn. Okay.
I had no doubt. I remember the preschool teacher asking, you know, who knows what they want to be when they grow up? And I was like, I do. I want to be a singer, an actress, a model, a gymnast, and a teacher. And the only thing I didn't do was be a gymnast because I couldn't tumble to save my life. I couldn't do a backflip or nothing, you know. So, but the teaching just comes from the motivational speaking and, like you said, going to Watts and South Africa and the women's prison that I did for 2 years out in Corona, you know, which is crazy in itself there. But, you know, that's where the teaching came in. But the acting side of it, I knew what I was going to be when I was 4. Couldn't nobody tell me no. They just couldn't tell me. I remember them telling me I wasn't going to be, you know, smart enough to go to Emerson and, you know, that I wasn't going to get in, that I had a 2% chance. And literally, when I went to the audition, the director of the musical theater department said, what do I have to do to get you here? And I was like, oh, all right. And so I went, and there you go. Then I moved to California and booked 7 shows my first 6 months. And people said, you know, oh, you're not going to find an agent. You're not going to do this. And I was like, I don't know what y'all talking about, but I'm about to do the damn thing. Because that's all I knew. I didn't know anything else but acting.
Now, that's funny because I was watching a special just last night because one of my idols, in my background, to tell you a little bit about me, before I got in full thing with this book author, dating coach type deal, I did some acting in my day, although nothing significant. And I even did stand-up for about a year and a half. And one of my major idols was Eddie Murphy.
Mm.
And I remember reading this article about Eddie Murphy, and they asked him, they said, what do you most attribute to your success? And he said, I think more than anything else is I knew specifically what I wanted to do at a very early age, and
mm-hmm.
I didn't give myself any other, like, alternative career
mm-hmm.
paths. I said, I want to be a comedian. I want to be in movies and television. And he said, I stuck with that, little similar to yourself. He said, I think from like the age of like 5 or 6, that was his specific laser-focused goal. And so I think there is something to, because he said something that's true. He said, I know people who are in their 30s, 40s, even 50s, who still are like, I don't really know what I want to do.
Yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, the joy about being, you know, on TV and having young people, you know, oh my God, you're you know, Simone or you're Kylie from Scrubs. The biggest joy that I get is that I never let them make it about me. That's my opportunity to be able to speak to them and just say, well, what do you want to do with your life? You know, or, you know, to see a kid and they're like, oh, I want to be a doctor. And I'm like, okay, well, what's your name? Johnson. All right, so Dr. Johnson. Everybody here, everybody's going to start calling this person Dr. Johnson. And it's those moments I try to help as much as I can to give a young person or an adult that same vision that someone gave to me. I have no idea who gave it to me, but just giving them that chief aim, having that focus of what it is that they want to do in life and keep speaking into existence. And that's just what I did. Like, For me, I was so naive, I guess, in a way, that there was no fear because I didn't know anything different. All I knew was that you go to school, you graduate high school, you go to college, you become what you want to be, and you just do it. That's all I knew. So all that discouragement I didn't have it wasn't in my psyche. I just knew this is what I'm going to be. I'm going to be on TV, and here you go. And I did, you know. So I think what you speak into people's life is what they're going to become.
which is why it's very important that we don't speak that negativity into their souls. You know, we are, someone said to me, we are words housed in the flesh. So we are what people have spoken to our lives.
Oh, I like that. That's great wisdom. So, similar to when I was talking to Tasha, want to know how it came about. When did you? Now, see, first of all, well, I gotta get a little nosy here, but I don't make apologies for it because this is upfront and straightforward. So, Christy, you're telling me that you were a virgin until you were married.
Yes, I was. I was 27.
Wow.
I was 27. And how it originally started was growing up, you know, my father, who I have a great relationship with now, but was not in my life. And my brother was my only male influence. And so, you know, when he's 4 years older than I am. So here I am, you know, 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old, and he's the star of the football team. He was a barber, so everybody used to come to the house, sit in front of my door, you know, go in your room, and, you know, I wasn't allowed to come out. And they would sit there and talk about women, like these girls, like how they would run a train in her and how they don't want to, you know, they were drunk running around in the streets and, you know, oh, we're never going to get with her again. And I would hear them talk about these women, and I was like, I'm not going to let them do that to me. So that was part of it, too. The other half of it was that my brother was a star on the football team and everybody was afraid of him. So you didn't mess with Christy Ferris. You didn't mess with, you know, Eric's little sister. And then the third thing was then by that time I had moved to Connecticut my, you know, junior, senior year of high school, and I met a guy at 17 who was 22 who said, hey, you know, I'm not going to have sex with you until we get married. And then we never ended up getting married, but it just set a standard. So by that time, I moved to L.A., and Steve Harvey's like, yo, you know, watch out for all these dudes. Don't become the new meat. And all of them were just giving me the lowdown about guys in L.A. So then that stopped me from having sex. And then from there, I was like, well, I might as well wait now. It became a ministry. So that's kind of how, you know, all that kind of stuff kind of came about. And then there was also that fear, you know, the fear of like, oh, my God, everybody's so grown, and I've never had sex before, so, you know, there's a part of a fear, which, hence, you know, my show came about, but yeah, it's like you wait so long, and then I'm like, well, dang, I don't know if I can do all these little tricks that everybody's talking about. I don't even know what's happening. You know, my mother never taught me about sex. We never talked about sex in my household, so, yeah, I was very naive when it came to stuff like that.
Now, that's funny. I hear that a lot on this very show, both from women I've spoken with, as well as the some of my like expert guests who are like sexologists, sex therapists. One of the things they point out, they said that a lot of parents do not talk to their children about sex. A lot of fathers don't talk to the sons. A lot of mothers don't talk to the daughters and any other way. And a lot of people end up learning about sex from their peers instead of, but, you know, their parents, and they said the first people that should introduce you to sex should be one of your two parents, if not both.
Right.
So, but yeah, I found it interesting because I've met maybe like a handful of women in my life that went beyond age of 21 being a virgin, but it's a very small number. And yeah, when I read that you said you waited until marriage to have sex, honestly, at first I was hating on you. I was like, she's lying. Christy lying. I was like, shoot, 27, get out of here. But damn. Okay, so you saved yourself until marriage, and on the 5-star scale, how would you rank your first week of marriage?
You gotta come see the show. It was not what I expected it to be, and that's why the show is called In Search of Oh. I mean, because I, you know, waited. I knew nothing about sex, and then of course I'm like, wait, this is what this is? Oh gosh, I have to do this again? I have to do this again tomorrow? Shit.
Okay,
like,
wait. I gotta stop you there, Christy. I gotta stop you there. Yeah. I gotta stop you there. Cause see, I love talking about anything to do with orgasms, my listeners know. So I love the fact that this centers around the search for orgasm. But one thing that makes your show distinctively different from Natasha, now, Natasha has her little thing with the puff puff pass, and she kind of goes through the number guys. But I don't think she alludes to anyone by name or, I mean, I'm sure some of her really close friends might know who she's talking about at different points during her production. But with yours, all you got to do is go on the internet and find out who you are married to. And I got to ask this question. Does this, your ex-husband, does he feel egotistically insulted that you're essentially implying that he was a disappointing lay? Is he, got a grudge against you right now?
It's funny because he had not, he knows about the show, but he never really saw it. He hasn't really heard until a couple of days ago when I did a little piece on one of the radio shows that's on YouTube. And he saw it, and he sent me a message, a text message, and I was like, oh, shit, oh, no, oh, Lord. But he actually chuckled. He laughed. He was like, this is funny. I'm glad you're.
He chuckled.
Yeah, he chuckled. I was thankful that, you know, he could laugh his way through it because he knows I'm an actor. He knows I make things funny. You know, I have to make light of things. That's what I'm good at as an actor, you know, is to take things that could be tragic and make it funny, you know, and make it relatable to the audience. And so he knows that there's some things that I'm sure I probably tweaked a little bit, but for the most part, he knows that it's true. And I'm sure there's a part of it, his ego is a little crushed, but you know, he and I have been friends since we were 12 years old. So we have that friendship, that bond in that sense. So, you know, he took it. Okay.
Okay, well, he earned some brownie points from me.
Oh, yeah, he definitely got some brownie points. Because
I'm going to tell you, if I was your ex-husband, if the show wasn't called The Story of Fantastic O's, man, I would be highly upset. I would be lying on you. I'd be like, oh, yeah, you know she was using drugs and she was an alcoholic at the time. Her mind wasn't right, so she just don't remember.
But I have to say, but let me just add this, is that part of it is, you know, the lack of knowledge that I had. Another part of it was that I really wasn't ready to be married, and I probably shouldn't have gotten married, you know, which also did not help in this situation. So I think all of those things combined, that's why I think this was such a learning experience with writing and being able to express myself, because I realized that it's not just about, you know, getting, you know, the screw, you know, just having sex and all that kind of stuff on, but that is more, it's deeper. It's deeper than just the external. And, you know, so there were other components that had to
Wait, I got to tease you, Christine. Did you say getting the screw?
Well, getting, you know, it's not just about the, you know, I said that.
That means the fact that you use that type of language lets me know that Natasha Price said, yes, Alan has a really PG-13 show. Because, see, on this show, we say fuck it.
I watched the show a little bit earlier. Yeah, we
say fuck it. We don't say stuff like, and then I was like, you know, screwing. And, that sounds so Disney.
I do have a potty mouth, so I'm.
Do you?
I'm sure. Yeah, it gets.
Ooh, let that potty mouth out. That's what gets me. This is very self-serving for me to say, but see, that's what gets my listeners to listen to my show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want you to say stuff that you wouldn't normally say per se, but one of the reasons, this is true, I'm not being funny here. One of the reasons why at least half of my listeners listen to my show, because I have a tendency to get people to say things that they wouldn't normally say. Like, a lot of my guests will say on my show, they'll say, this is the first radio interview I've ever done where I talk about fucking dick and fucking and, you know, get my pussy licked. Oh, my God, I can't believe I just said that. And So I like for people to say, listen to a show and say, damn, did you hear what Alan got to say? Damn.
Right.
So if that's your natural flow, do not hold back.
Listen, if I get to a place and it ends up coming out, it's just going to going to come out. I don't, you
it's
know.
It's going to come out. I like that. I like
yeah,
that. Now, what's interesting, when you talk about in search of, and again, that's representative orgasms, I remember I read a study that said, and it disappointed me and made me look at the members of my fellow gender with disappointment. It said something like 65% of all women feel, married or unmarried, feel sexually dissatisfied, which is why they said why the female sex toy industry is almost a $1 billion industry. Do you think a lot of men just don't put enough effort to satisfy women sexually?
Well, I think that there's also part of, I think some guys don't. I think, one of the things that I had to learn and that I realized is that when I was talking to my aunt about it before she passed away, and one of the things she says, you know, a guy is just as dumb as you are about sex. You know, and every dude thinks that they know what they're doing, and every woman is going to be different, just like every man is going to be different. I think, you know, people don't take the time to do it. They're automatically, especially like a guy, which is, you know, that ego. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. And in actuality, he really doesn't. And so now you're sitting there, and, you know, you get to a place where you're like, look, this just ain't happening. You're going to have to get up. You know, this ain't working no more.
Wow.
You know, so that's when you got to just really be completely honest. But, you know, I just think that guys are just as dumb as women. And there are some guys who do know what they're doing. And then there's some guys who doesn't, just like the same thing with women. You know?
Now,
but
similar to the question
I
asked Natasha, did she have any hesitation in doing her show? Was there ever a point, even for a few hours, a few days, a few weeks, where you said, I don't know if I want to do a whole public show about my sex life? Or where you balls out and said, fuck it, I'm going to just do this?
I was kind of like, fuck it, I just got to do it. And the reason why was because I did not, you know, I grew up in a place where I did not talk about sex. And for me, when I wrote the piece, it was just this comical thing. And I didn't know, I really didn't know what I had, to be honest. I did it for this workshop called What's the Story with Stacey Chaikin. And I wrote it, and I'm being funny and all this kind of stuff, thinking, oh, I don't really have anything. And she's like, well, you should put it up. And I was like, no. And when I did it, you know, I had about 80 people in the audience, and they laughed through the whole thing. They got it. And I actually had three women that were in the audience who were drug addicts who had just relapsed and were just, you know, coming out of, like, recovery and blah, blah, blah. Well, they actually told me what the piece was about, which I thought was interesting, because they were like, I get it. It's about a connection. It's about having a connection. And I guess for people who are drug addicts, you know, they disconnect. And so I was like, oh, wow, it is about a connection, which I was like, dang, I'm still trying to find the connection. And this is, I wrote the piece in 2005, 2006. And then from there, when I started to travel and do it at different places, a lot of women would come out and they would say, wow, that's my story. That's my story. And that's when I realized I have to tell the story, because women are not talking about it. Men are not talking about it. Women are not expressing with their men, oh, you know, I'm not really getting wet. This really isn't helping. I'm not enjoying the fact that you're going down and you're not, you know, all of this stuff that they don't want to talk about it. But now these women are coming up to me. Oh, my gosh, I remember the first time I had my orgasm. Oh, I remember the first time he hit it here. And, you know, and I was dry and now I'm wet. And, you know, these grown women are coming up and having these conversations. And if it opened up that line of communication, then I did my job. I'm happy to be able to tell my story at the sacrifice of people looking at me and judging me. And at the end of the day, I don't give a damn anyway.
Ooh. I like that attitude. You go, sister. Listeners, if you have a question for one of my two guests, or you have comments you want to add to this discussion, please call in 646-478-5710. 646-478-5710. I'm getting ready to take another intermission break. But when I get back, I'm going to talk to both Natasha and Christy, and we're just going to talk a lot about the state of dating and relationships today. I'm going to ask them some provocative questions to get their strong opinions on what men are doing right, what men are doing wrong, what women are doing right, what women are doing wrong, and particularly in the African American community. But before I go to break, you know, listeners, I got to ask Christy this favor. Christy, the name of my first book is called Mold One, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking. That's what I'm most known by, Mold One. And it's become a tradition on this show that the guests, I ask them to stretch out the O's and say, Mold One. So I want to ask for either A, your most enthusiastic Mold One, or since you're a woman, your most seductive Mold One.
All right, so Mold One.
Alan Roger Curry.
Good up front, straightforward.
Alan Roger Curry.
Listeners, I will be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavored 2, presented by Zay. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode One fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode One.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't know
that. It's only 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay. There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindset is correct. Someone is a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that's, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
Just so listeners know, there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book, and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, and he said, and you know what? I found my swagger, and now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you gotta love it.
single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview with Natasha Dixon and Christy Ferris on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program in the category of romance, dating, and relationships on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. And tonight, if you're just tuning in, I am conversing with two very lovely, sexy, intelligent, articulate, talented actresses, playwrights, and they both have very extensive resumes. They've achieved a lot in the area of the performing arts, and they each have a one-woman show that is touring different cities in the United States. Natasha Dixon has a show called Evolution of a Love Addict. Evolution of a Love Addict. And then my other guest, Christy Ferris, has a show called In Search of O. In Search of O. And I've been chatting with them about the contents of their shows and what led to their shows. And I welcome them both back. First of all, I want to give some few quick shout-outs to those who have already been in my chat room. I've seen some people come, some people go. But right now, I have Stephen Harper in my chat room. I got that funny username. I can't pronounce that. Please change that for me, because see, you embarrassing me, make me look like I'm inarticulate. Susie de Hassas. Yeah, I'm already trying to learn Portuguese. Got S-Dub-72. Nikki smokes a lot. She made it clear to me that it's not tobacco she smokes. She smokes the good stuff. It's now legal in, what, I think two states? Love and Light is in my chat room. I got my guest, Natasha. She's in there as the Love Addict. The Love Addict. I got my loyal listener, Jason, from Australia. And I got a few guests. Natasha said it's Colorado Puff Pass. Oh, that's catchy. Puff Pass. Okay, Christy, I got a question for you.
Yes.
I had a guest on my show, was it last fall or the fall before that? I can't remember now. Her name was Dr. Veronica Anderson, and she was one of the rare women that was actually encouraging women to have sex on the first date. And it's kind of related to your situation. She said she believed that you should have sex on the first date, or if not the very first date, at least shortly thereafter, because she said her main argument was, why would you want to develop an emotional bond with someone only to find out later that you guys have very little, if any, sexual chemistry and sexual compatibility? And I had a woman call into my show and said that she admitted that she had met a guy that they were just friends, then they escalated to romance. They dated for 2 years, then they got engaged, then they were married about 9 months later, and they didn't have any premarital sex. And then when she had sex, she said she just was not, she knew right away it wasn't going to work. And she tried to make it work, but they ended up getting divorced, I think, a year later or so. So she, my guest, Dr. Veronica Anderson, said have sex as quickly as possible. But then, of course, you have a lot of others, particularly people in the religious community, that suggest doing what you did, which is wait until you are married to have sex. So all that to say, what is your overall thoughts on the idea of having sex early in the early stages of a relationship versus waiting until it's really, really solidified?
I mean, have sex on the very first, I mean, you got to check, you know, you got to show some papers. I need to know your status. You know, where are you with your STDs? You know, I mean, that's a little, I think that's a little soon. I just happen to be a person that has to be emotionally connected first. I just can't, you know. I don't think, you know, I have to have some, you know, I just have to, or I'm, that's a rough one.
Ooh, Christy, you.
Yes, but I will say this. My dad actually thinks like she does, because my dad, that's one of the things I have that I wrote in there, is that my dad's like, yo, I think you should get with a few different guys so that you know what you like sexually. You know what I mean? So, yes, that's interesting.
Yeah, see, Christy, if I showed you, I do these little freelance articles for what's called TheExaminer.com.
And mm-hmm.
Based on that comment you just made, you wouldn't have liked my last article because I criticize women like you.
Why? Because we have to be emotionally attached?
Hey, no, I did this relationship chat here in Chicago in September, and we talked about a number of things. And we started talking about casual sex, and there was at least 2 to 3 women. They said, I'm sorry, but even with casual sex, I need to be emotionally connected. And I was like, why? And then they, because. And they, honestly, not to disparage them, but none of them gave me a really detailed, articulate answer. They just said, basically, it was like, just because, you know, you want to feel like. But I just recently wrote an article that was related to this whole Petraeus affair. I said, I think the mistake that Paula Broadwell made, number one, they shouldn't have been having an affair. That's first and foremost. But once they got it going, she shouldn't have allowed herself to become emotionally attached to
right.
Petraeus
well,
to the point where it provoked her to write a harassing email to this other woman. And I've been telling women that for years, and some women have nodded their head and say they understand. Other women, they actually criticize me and get mad in response to it. But I say, there is no room for emotions with casual sex.
If you're having casual sex, absolutely not. I mean, you know that's what you're going in there for, and you know, you better know what you're getting up front. Especially because I think a dude will tell you right up front, and I think that's part of the problem that women have is that they do get emotionally attached, or they think, you know, a guy will say, hey, you know, this is just sex, and they're like, oh, okay, cool, and then all of a sudden they're getting attached. My issue or my concern is that I'm usually unemotionally attached, and that's part of my problem. So I just feel like for me, I usually don't connect. So for me, it's just better to have a connection. Doesn't mean that, you know, everything has got to be, doesn't mean it's going to be a long-term situation. I just have to have some type of something. Otherwise, you know, you're going to get dissed pretty quickly.
Okay. Natasha, what's your whole thought? I see you chatting yourself away in the chat. Ah, Natasha, you a character. What's your thoughts on the whole notion of premarital sex and having sex quickly versus waiting a while?
I honestly think you need to figure out what you want, because if you just want to be hoeing around and get your fix, then go right ahead. Sex on the first date, fine, but don't be trying to make that your man. Your man, if you have sex with somebody on the first date, that's not your man. Don't, no matter how hard you try to convince yourself, and no matter what he says, it's time to just realize that that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a sex thing. And then I think what happens also is chicks say, oh, I understand. You just want to be friends with benefits. I won't get attached. I'm sorry. Chicks get attached. That's just how we're made. And I think it's important to understand that if this is the game you're going to play, just know there are consequences. And you need to understand that there are the possibilities that you're going to get attached. It's just a matter of when, and you need to know your pattern so you can bounce before that attachment is hardcore solidified, because you will be attached, period, the minute you have sex with somebody.
Well, this is what I agree with probably three-fourths of what you said, and I disagree with about a fourth. The small portion I disagree with what you said, I don't think it automatically if a woman has sex with a guy quickly, because I can only speak for myself. I've actually had sex with a woman on the first date, and we ended up dating. That wasn't my initial plan, but the chemistry was so great that, because see, I don't want to simplify men too much, but at the risk of doing so, this is how men are. If we enjoy your company sexually and non-sexually, that's when you're a candidate for girlfriend material. If I like just like sitting on the couch with you, cracking jokes while we both watch the TV, and I love it when we fucking, I'm like, oh shit, okay, she's a keeper. But
of course,
if when we ain't fucking, you either bore me or irritate me, I'm like, okay, she's strictly casual sex.
And the girl who doesn't want to do that doesn't need to be kicking it with you. Because
I agree with that. I agree.
Women, there are some men who move a little slower. So she needs to know where she is and kick it with those kind of guys, not try to make a hoe into a housewife on the reverse.
Yeah, because, well, I've often said on this show that I have criticisms of both genders. As a matter of fact, I'm going to ask you each that question in a few minutes. But my criticism against my own gender is I don't like men. If anybody's read my books, they know one of the things I preach about. I don't like men who mislead women and act like they want something long-term and monogamous when they really just want short-term, non-monogamous, casual sex. Similarly, I'm critical of women along the lines of what you just alluded to. I don't like women who pretend to be down and cool with casual sex when they know they just want, I mean, when they know they want something more. Now, in women's partial, and I'll put bold italic letters on partial, because the men get mad when I give y'all too much of a defense. And you all's partial defense about this whole notion of women automatically get emotionally attached, I used to argue vehemently against that. But then I did some research, and I had even some guests on this show that let me know that women have a hormone called oxytocin.
You got that right.
That is released. But here's the thing. I expressed in an article before women react to that too quick. Guess what? Oxytocin is released, number one, when you're giving birth to a child, because that's what causes you to bond with your child. And they found out through research that one of the other times it's released is when you're having a powerful orgasm. So in other words, any woman that says she get emotionally attached to a guy, but she's also saying in the same breath that the guy wouldn't get in bed, she lying. She ain't got nothing to do with no oxytocin. If a guy's a horrible fuck, you are not getting emotionally attached to him. But yes, if a guy's got some good dick, basically, and he's turning you out, and he's making you just come and come and come, yes, a woman will release oxytocin, and she'll start saying, baby, honey, boo, I love you. And now I was talking about both genders. I want to ask each of you, I'll start with you, Natasha. I want you to give me 2 to 3 criticisms based on your experiences, your observations, 2 to 3 criticisms of your own gender that you think is holding them back from having better relationships, and then 2 to 3 criticisms of my gender. And then when you're finished, Christy, I want you to offer the same thing.
All right, so I'll speak generally because I like to think of everyone as an individual, but I'll never put one label on a certain gender or person. But generally speaking, I think a lot of women are, I think they're guarded and unavailable. I have a lot of friends that talk about they can't find a date, and I don't have that problem. Now I'm in a relationship, but I'm just saying I think a lot of women are guarded. You have to ask yourself the question of how often do you smile? Are you smiling at the person? Are you looking hard thinking, oh, he ain't going to like me? He's not going to come up and talk to you. So I run into women who have a hard disposition, and most men like light and fluffy. So that might be a general criticism.
Okay.
As far as guys, I think if I have to make some shit up.
How would you make it shit up?
No, I'm just saying because I've seen some men like this, but I'm not saying every guy is like this. I do not believe every guy is like this.
Well, I
think a lot of men are not emotionally available completely. They're only going to give a portion of themselves, and they will never fully understand what that blissful love romantic is because they want to control it. So they're going to give a piece of themselves and not fully give themselves.
Huh. Okay. Christy?
Well, I think part of the problem on both ends is that most people aren't honest. They're just not honest about, you know, they're not honest with themselves and they're not honest with the other person. I think part of it is that most people, if they just be upfront and truthful about everything,
wait, time out. Stop that.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be, I want you to modify that second word. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that they need to be upfront and straightforward
mm-hmm.
with other people.
Upfront and straightforward with other people. And that is, to me, one of the biggest thing, the communication is just not happening. And
yeah.
I think also, too, too bad I'm sitting up here driving at the same time on the 405 stuck. So my little brain just went out the window, but I had something.
Oh, Lord. Well, since you said upfront and straightforward, I'm going to do my chin again.
Alan Roger Curry.
You're upfront and straightforward.
Alan Roger Curry. No one.
Yeah, because Christy, to let you give me my 1.5 minute backstory, see, that's what my books are essentially all about. My book, original book, Mo One, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking. The gist of that book is it's written for men, although a lot of women have read it. But what I was just talking about a few minutes ago about men misleading women, it started in college. I noticed that a lot of guys, when they wanted casual sex, their main method of getting it was to make a woman feel like they had feelings for her and that they wanted a long-term, you know, boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. But then once they tapped that ass for a few days or a few weeks or whatever, they would just dump the woman. And the women would be hurt. And then if I was cool with them, they would come to me and be like, Ellen, why do men do that? And I would say, that's because they feel the shit. They just wanted casual sex. And they would say, well, why don't they just say that? So when I went back to the fellas and said, yeah, guys, why don't y'all just let the women know you want guys? Oh, man, you crazy. You can't do that shit. You can't let women know what you're really thinking. You cannot be honest with women. To this day, I tell guys women all the time, to this day guys tell me that. They always say that. Say, man, you can't be honest with women and when you first meet them. You got to lie to them and bullshit them. And so I challenged them. I said, no, you can be straight. They said, okay, next party, Alan, why don't you go up to some women just straightforwardly say, all I want to do is fuck. Yeah, we'll see what reactions you get. Well, to my pleasant surprise, I did just that. And what would happen is the first few minutes, women would say, what? Excuse me? I can't believe you said that. And then a few minutes later, they'd be like, you nasty. You so bad. Then guys was like, damn, did y'all see Alan? He just straight up told that baby he wanted her to suck his dick. And she just was like smiling and shit. So that's where Mo 1 came from. Now I got 4 books, but all my books have that same general theme of upfront, straightforward, honesty, no lies, no head games. Now, I know people are flexible and they change, you know, but I think if you know at a certain given moment in time, if you're a guy, you know that all you want is casual sex, then you need to just say that. Among other reasons, if I want to get melodramatic and extreme, I tell guys, when you're toying with women's emotions, you know that old saying, hell hath no fury. All you got to do is, fellas, is watch Play Misty for Me and Fatal Attraction, enough said. You lie to women, toy with their emotions, and one day you'll just be walking, whistling down, and just go, bullet in the skull. I don't mess with no woman's emotions. I lay it on the table, even if it means them criticizing me. Now, Christy, I heard that you do some kind of provocative pole dancing in search of home. That really makes guys rise to the occasion in the audience. What's that about? Talk to a brother about this whole pole thing.
Well, I have a character. Her name is Maria, and she comes in and she teaches Christy, or she tried to teach Christy how to pole dance. So, you know, Poppy, you know, I just need you to come on in and I'll show you a little pole dance. You know, I could take care of you. Don't worry about it, Poppy, okay? Just come on in. If you want to send your mija over, just tell her to come over and I'll teach you how to do a little pole dance, okay? Don't worry about it. I'll take care of you, you know, because I want you to be right and I want her to be right so that you can be pleased, okay? Because me and Hector is the pole, you know. Me and Hector, we have a good time, you know. He gives me an orgasm every single day. Me and Hector, we just have a good time.
Ah, that's pretty good. Oh, now, is this Maria? Does she happen to have any Portuguese background? Because I'm trying to learn Portuguese, and I could, you know.
No, I know you're going to take your trip and everything, but no, Poppy, that's on the other side. No, we're on the other side of the world, no.
Real
go
quick.
Have fun, you know. Go have fun, though, you know.
That's really good, Christy. I'm impressed. Real quick, I want to give a shout-out. I see Madison Media Radio in my chat room. Madison, were you in here? You know I still run your commercial, man. You need to be paying me like a little royalty, man. But much props to you. He's an old-school Blog Talk Radio host. I got Delicious Talk. I like that. I like that username. Delicious Talk is in my chat room, along with everyone that I've mentioned before. Now, okay, Natasha, I want to ask you what.
Huh? One sec, I just want to give a shout out to Deep Confession of Men. He's on my Twitter and he's listening right now, so just wanted to give a little shout out to him.
Oh, matter of fact, speaking of listeners, I invite people to call in and press 1. I see I have an area code 678. 678, you are now Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guests Natasha Dixon and Christy Ferris. What's your first name and what's your question?
Hey, this is Space Mountain Colin from Northwest Atlanta, Georgia. First time listener, and you know, I'm proud of you, my brother Curry. And I have to give a shout out to my two Nubian goddesses out there, you know, Christy and Natasha. It's good to see sisters doing well. How are you doing this evening?
Great. Thank you.
Well, you know, I have to sort of get in on the conversation, and it's very intriguing to what y'all were speaking about because I see it every day, and I try to teach this to other brothers and other sisters. Number one, you got to have that love for yourself. If you cannot love yourself, you cannot give that love to anyone else. Secondly, you got to have that agape love. The agape love is that unconditional love that God gives us. And then you have erotic love, just like the love type of love that you have. Me, I'm that type that I'm a cerebral assassin. By what I mean, when you look into the left eye of a woman, you're looking into her soul, not to play type of games, but you try to just be real to learn, you know, about her. And you want her to look back into the left eye of that man. That's what I do. Now, to be upfront, I was 24 years old before I got my first piece of ass, and it was with a much older woman, and believe me, I was scared as hell, but I learned a lot. So that what made me become the type of individual I am. But then being a parent, having a 12-year-old son, and I tell you, these little girls today, they are after him, and he asked me these type of questions and just to try to keep him in line. But, you know, I think We need to be real with each other. You know, I had one woman to look at me from head to toe, toe to head, and tell me no. I still respected her. I still, you know, treated her well and all that type of stuff. Now she's coming at me like white on rye. But, hey, the feeling is, you know, all dead and gone. So it just comes back to, like, a very prominent minister here in Atlanta said, it's time for us to put the fire out, come home, and be real with one another.
What was your first name again, brother?
Space Mountain.
Space, okay, that's the deal. Space Mountain, you know, you got a compliment in my chat room. Somebody said you got that deep resonant voice like Morgan Freeman. And so another thing, you expressed something that I had to pause when Christy said. So you said people need to be real with each other. So in other words, they need to be upfront and straightforward with each other, right?
That's correct, because the thing about it, the worst thing you can do, it's just like the movie, A Thin Line Between Love and Hate. People really need to look at that. The first time I saw that movie in Daytona Beach, Florida, it scared the shit out of me. After that, I look at it, look, I don't have time to play games, tricks, or forget kids. I'm all for fun, but I have no time for games because I do have other sisters. I treat a woman the way how I want my biological sisters to be treated because whatever it takes to get her, I'm going to continue to do it to hold on to her. That's the way my dad and my brothers taught me. So once you do that, you will become the best there is, the best there was, and the very best you ever will be, both on the male and female side of the sexes.
Space Mountain, do me a favor and give me a nice, enthusiastic mode one.
Mode one.
Alan Roger Curry.
Get up front, straight forward.
Alan Roger Curry.
Thank you for calling in, Space Mountain, from the Atlanta area. Anybody else, if you want to call in, the number is 646-478-5710. We're supposed to close down 11, but I'm going to go at least 15 minutes over since I got started a little late. And I'm going to continue the conversation with Christy and Natasha. Now, Natasha, I was going to ask you. Christy has her little pole dancing. I haven't seen the show, but if you can reveal a little bit about what. Do you have one scene that you would say is arguably the most provocative or sensuous dialogue or action of your show?
Nope. No pole dance in my show. I let my girl handle it, and she does handle that pole, man. She be working the pole. But but I think the most catchy of my show is the opening of my show. But I have several moments throughout my show that intrigue people. But yeah, the opening is the most catchy.
Okay.
I agree. She's got a lot of great moments in there.
No.
Yeah, it's so hard for me to narrow down.
How long? I think I heard on another interview you guys did. Did you guys meet on the set of Moesha, or did you know each other before that?
We met on the set of Moesha.
And now, was this originally planned on being a collaborative effort, or not necessarily?
No. I mean, you mean as far as doing the pieces together?
Yes.
No. Let me tell you, this girl was like, I don't have a director. I haven't finished writing everything. She was like, when she was talking about, you know, being fearless and jumping off the cliff and just going for it, she literally was like, I'm paying for the venue. I'm jumping in here. I'm about to do this piece. I don't even have a director, but I'm going to do it. Set a date, started sending out stuff, and then got the director and all that and finished finish writing the rest of it. And then in the meantime, I had already done my show, but I was like, well, shoot, let me jump on your, you know, your coattail. I'll do the show with you. And, you know, she was like, fine. And, you know, and I think we both had the vision at the same time, to be honest. I know, I think it was just, you know, both of us just speaking, and I'm being funny with it, but we ended up doing it together, and it was just such a good fit. It, we just continued on with it from there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And
so we'll actually be doing a tour together at the beginning of next year. Like, we do our show separate, like, you know, her college in Boston, my caller to do it. I'm going to my hometown in San Jose, but we sat down and we picked some dates and locations for our tour at the beginning of the year.
Now, you're performing in New York tomorrow, right, Natasha?
I sure am. I am in New York, 42nd Street at 7:30 p.m., 410 West 42nd. So if you're here, you know, come on out.
The Big
Apple.
See
me do my puff-puff pass.
Puff-puff-pass.
Puff-puff-pass on a brother.
Now, okay, speaking of that same interview that I got some of my information, I think it was on, I don't want to mess up his name.
Oba.
Yeah, that. Him. cool brother. Now, Natasha, I heard you mention that you dated, and I want to clarify, that doesn't mean you was exchanging orgasms with each of these guys, but you dated something like 100 guys in this, like, really short period of time. How was that like?
I set out to do a challenge to date 100 guys in a year, and I ended up dating 36 guys in, like, 6 weeks. And
wow.
I was tired as hell. And no, that's no sex. Sex clouds your judgment. You really need to learn how to date without the sex. So I dated 36 dudes in 6 weeks. I was calling my friends, talking about, I am tired. I do not want to go on another freaking date.
That's like almost a date a day.
Yeah, some of them were, you know, I had a Starbucks afternoon date and then a dinner date. Somebody might have been a walk in the morning kind of date.
Now, why did you have this goal? What motivated this goal to want to date so many guys in such a short period of time?
Well, this girl had told me about an episode of Oprah where this lady dated 100 guys because she was trying to find her husband. So she was like, I'll go through these guys and try to figure out, you know, what works. What do I like about these dates? What don't I like about these dates? And she figured the quickest way to find, you know, the reason you're not in a relationship is because you're averages. I mean, that's like people who aren't booking television shows, like, how many auditions did you go on? You know, so she was, you know, dating multiple guys so she could find her husband. So anyway, I read about that in an article, and I set out to say, okay, well, how about I strategically do this? Because I was already on, after each divorce I had, I was already on this dating, you know, pattern. So I figured, why don't I just go ahead and make it more strategic?
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, I actually taught a class at a local university in Northwest Indiana called Dating for 21st Century Singles. And one of the things I talked about in that class is actually in my second book, which is called the same as this show. It's called Upfront and Straightforward, Let the Manipulative Game Players Know What You're Really Thinking. But one of the things I told people to kind of enlighten the particularly the younger people is that I said dating doesn't really happen today like it did in my parents' generation. Because I remember when I was young, my mother, we had this long conversation, I think when I was in my late teens, early 20s. And she basically broke down how dating was in her and my father's generation and basically was similar to what you, wasn't quite that intense, but the basic structure of dating was, if you were a guy, you would identify, say, 8 women that you were potentially interested in. And then you would go out on one date with all 8 women. Then you might go out on a second date with 6 or 7 of those 8 women. Then you go out on a third date with like 4 or 5 of those 8 women. And you keep going on subsequent dates until you identified the woman you were going to go steady with.
Yeah, nowadays I find that a lot of men, at least in California, have lost the hunter, that instinct. they've lost the hunting instinct. They got the deers rolling up and jumping on the hood and strapping themselves on the hood.
You know, that is, Natasha, you know, that's so funny you say that. That's so funny because I think I told you last time I interviewed you, I used to live in L.A. I lived in L.A. for 6.5 years. I still go back there like two or three times a year. I was just out there actually in mid-August. But when I lived out there, it was so weird. I used to tell my buddies back here, almost every time I met a woman, at least 4 out of every 5 times I met a woman, they would say, "You're not from here, are you?" And I would say,
nah,
"How do you know? Is it an accent or something?" Then they would basically say, "No, just the fact that you approach me, period, let me know that you're not from here." And I said, "Really?" They say, "Yeah, most native L.A. guys, they tend to expect women to approach them." And I've heard the same thing about D.C. guys. A lot of people say D.C. guys, they expect women because of the ratio. They just expect women to approach them, so they don't approach women. And whereas I've always been a guy that's pretty much usually made the first move, although I've had a lot of instances, too, where women made the first move. But yeah, they would know just by the fact that I made the first move. They would say, "Yeah, you must be from somewhere else." And so that's so interesting that you would.
Yeah, I think somewhere along the line, guys started becoming insecure about that as well. I think some of them may have a cocky perspective of, yeah, they come to talk to me. But I've talked to some dudes, and they're like, "Do you know how hard it is with the rejection factor?" And not that I'm trying to downplay it, but I'm just like, "Yo, man up." You know?
Well, you know, I tell a lot of my clients, and when I do workshops, one guy, a celebrity I highlight is George Clooney. George Clooney admitted in a Playboy interview, he said, number one, he admitted that half the reason he wanted to be rich and famous is so he could pull more women. I tell people, guys on the show, I always get a kick when actors admit that shit. Because a lot of actors say, "Well, I'm just really about the craft." And I'm like, bullshit. Part of the reason you want to be a movie star because you want to get more pussy. And anyway, George Clooney admitted that. And he said, because he went on to say, he said, "I don't like being rejected." He said, "I've always hated the notion of men having to approach women." He said, "I don't like putting my ego on the line to get rejected." He said, "So I would rather have women approach me." And he said, "But realistically, the only way they're going to usually approach you is if you're some kind of famous person, somebody in the public eye." And I found that most interesting that he said that.
Yeah.
Now, Christy and Natasha, what ideally, other than just generally being entertained, Christy, how do you want your production to resonate with your audience and particularly your female audience? Give me 2 or 3 bullet points of what you would want them to learn from your show.
I would say being open, being able to have the conversation about wherever they are sexually with their mate. And with other people. And then the third thing is, the second thing would be freedom, just being able to be free to be who you are sexually as a woman. And I think the last thing is about connecting, having a connection with someone. That's really, my main focus of the whole entire piece is the honesty and then the freedom and then having the connection.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Natasha, what would you say how you want your show to resonate with your audience, particularly your female audience, and what would be 2 or 3 bullet points that describe what you want them to take away when they leave your show?
My log line is a sneak peek into the mind of a serial dating divorcee on her quest to find the love that really matters. So there is a very faint spiritual through line. The love that really matters is what your guy was talking about. When you can finally know that God loves you and see yourself through his eyes, you're going to do things differently. But I want people to look at me making fun of the choices and decisions I made in a comedic way to possibly be able to shine light on what they may have done or going through so that they can have permission to heal. I touch bases. I touch on, you know, my father having, I have twin brothers out of wedlock, not my mom's kids. My parents are still married. I touch on that and how that shaped me. So I want my people to be able to walk away with not having shame from choices and decisions either they made in their past or their family has made in the past, that they can actually walk free because they see me up on stage telling my story, and to know they are not alone.
Okay. Well, it looks like we got another caller. Area code 323-323, you are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guests, Natasha Dixon and Christy Ferris. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Jared, and I'm actually, I know Natasha personally.
Jared, what's up?
Hey, what's up? How are you?
Great. I'm glad you called in.
So, Jared,
yeah,
you know this character named Natasha for a while, huh?
Yeah, not for a while, but I could say we used to live in the same area. And,
okay.
And we had a couple conversations. But I just wanted to get a chance to say, you know, congratulations, because I know how motivated you are and how passionate you are about what you do and, you know, all the things that you do. And so I just wanted to make sure to let you know that God bless you.
Thank you.
And I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
Oh, that's sweet.
That is sweet.
Now that you got that sweet stuff out the way, Jared, give me one juicy tidbit about Natasha, man. Like, she licks her fingers after she eats chicken wings or something juicy.
Whatever.
What was that?
He said to give him one character.
Juicy tidbit, something that most people wouldn't know about her. Something that she probably wouldn't want people to know, like, you know, she licks the bowl after she eats ice cream or just something crazy.
just put it like she looks good working out.
Oh, looks good working out.
You stalk her in the gym. I'm just playing.
Nah.
That's how we met. That's where I met you.
Yeah, you know, I try to, you know, keep my flattery at a minimum. You know, I got to play that hard man role. You know what's up, Natasha? But I have to say, I saw this picture. Actually, it was you and Christy. Y'all look like y'all at a nightclub or some type of party. And, yeah, y'all looking hot. I have to give y'all props on that for that. Y'all was looking juicy and delicious. And,
okay, you talk about licking your lips while you eat chicken.
Hey, I love, my listeners know, I love, two things I love is chicken wings and peach schnapple. So that's my two loves when it comes to food. Chicken wings, peach schnapple.
I'm not mad.
But Jared, thank you for calling in. I appreciate you giving your friend Natasha those type of props. And thank you for listening to my show. Alrighty. Alright, well, I'm going to start. Go ahead and wrap things up. Christy, tell my listening audience where they can find out more about you on the worldwide net and also, you know, upcoming shows, upcoming events, anything else you want to share with my listening audience.
Well, they can always find me on Twitter, which is Christy Ferris, CHRYSTEE, P as in Peter, HARRIS. So Christy Ferris, with a Twitter, Facebook, my website, ChristyFerris.com. And shooting the film, but I guess I should wait to make sure everything actually does work out. You know, it's a lot of hurry up and wait. But it's supposed to be with Cuba Gooding. He's playing my husband. So I'm waiting to get the final on that. And then, of course, Natasha and I will be in Vegas, Ohio, New York, Boston, New Jersey, D.C.
Atlanta.
So all of that's going to be happening in the new year. So just definitely check us out and keep us posted. And we love to text back and, you know, hit people back. So
Okay.
We communicate. That type of thing. We communicate.
Yes, we do.
Good deal. And Christy, I don't know whether to give you props or be mad at you, but you've done most of this interview while you were driving?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Oh, in perfect timing because I'm about to run. I'm late for this event.
Okay.
But yes, I did.
Well, I appreciate you making that effort. Natasha, tell your fans and my listeners where they can find you on the World Wide Web and find out more about your shows and what's coming up.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Everyone can find out more about what's on my schedule at evolutionofaloveaddict.com, Evolution of a Love Addict. And there's a trailer, there's an event schedule, but tomorrow night, if you are in New York, New Jersey, anywhere that you can get to New York at 7:30 p.m. on Theater Row, 410 West 42nd Street, come on out at 7:30. Evolution of Love Addict will be performing. And then I will also be in San Jose. So any of my Bay Area, yay area.
Well, that's your hometown, right?
Yep, my hometown. Show up. I will be at the Agenda Lounge November 24th at 8 p.m. in San Jose, November 24th. So y'all can come on out, watch a show, and then dance off that turkey. So check me out, evolutionofaloveaddict.com.
Well, ladies, it's been thoroughly enjoyable. You've provided some great information, great insight, great wisdom, and great descriptions of your shows. I cannot wait to check both of you all out at some point in the future. And I wish you nothing but continued success in all your future endeavors.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Listeners, that's going to do it for our show tonight. Again, disappointing news, I will not be on. I wasn't going to be on next week anyway because, again, that's Thanksgiving. Normally, I would be back in 2 weeks, but I will not be on air live even on November 29th. I will not be on air again until December 6th, so I'll keep you posted on who the guest will be, what the discussion topic will be. But until then, have a great weekend. Have a great Thanksgiving. And I will be on the air live again in 3 weeks. So take care, and I will talk to you soon.